Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Hello, friends. Anthony Marco has supported independent tech news directly for almost 5 years. Thanks, Anthony. Be like Anthony. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, December 20th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Oakland, California, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Roger, are you okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Is my voice breaking up?
A little bit. A little bit. Are you?
Yeah, we're concerned.
I'm just going through a second childhood.
Yeah. It's day 25 of Roger's cold, and he refuses to see a doctor. We are going to talk about whether we should fire up our Angel Fire and LiveJournal and Tripod sites in order to fix what everybody thinks wrong with social networks. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Qualcomm was granted a second injunction against Apple Thursday that bans Apple from selling some phones in Germany that use chips from Intel and Qorvo. Apple says it plans to appeal, but for now, in the meantime, iPhone 7 and iPhone 8 models won't be sold in its 15 retail stores in the country of Germany.
Uber is resuming on-road testing of its autonomous cars in Pittsburgh Thursday. The company paused all testing in March after a woman was killed by an Uber autonomous car in Arizona. Uber will also put self-driving cars back on the streets in San Francisco and Toronto, but those cars will not operate in full autonomous mode. Two safety drivers will be in all of the cars.
Two by two, Ubers of blue. Some Slack users with ties to Iran found their accounts had been deactivated Thursday. The bans affected users living in several countries, including the U.S. Slack did not notify users beforehand that this was going to happen, so they didn't have time to create archives or back up their data. In a statement to The Verge, Slack said it complies with all U.S. regulations on embargoed countries which prohibit Slack use in Cuba, Iran, North Korea, Syria, and the Crimea region of Ukraine. This issue likely is linked to IP addresses in Iran tied to a Slack workspace's primary owner, even if that owner isn't where that IP address is. All right, let's talk a little more about Amazon having a little data problem, Justin.
An Amazon user in Germany got access to 1,700 recordings from another user of Amazon's assistant because of what the company says was an unfortunate case of human error. The user had requested his own files under the GDPR, but the link Amazon sent him also included the files of another user. The requester reported the error but got no response. However, Amazon subsequently deleted the stranger's files from the link, but the requester had already downloaded them all. Amazon told Reuters, quote, "We resolved the issue with the two customers involved and took measures to further optimize our process. As a precautionary measure, we contacted the relevant authorities," end quote.
Well, I think we're going to hear a lot more about little issues like this, and it won't be just Amazon, but for Amazon to say, you know what this was? It was not our assistant's error. It was a human. Don't worry about what human that was. We're on the case, but it wasn't our assistant. Keep buying Echo speakers. Thank you very much.
The take I see a few people having out there is this is a forced error because of GDPR. That if GDPR wasn't forcing companies to comply with all these requests, even if they're not necessary, I mean, this user in Germany, by all accounts, just was curious. It was not like he needed the stuff he just wanted to see, which is fair. You should be able to do that. But a lot more people are doing that now because of the GDPR. And therefore, it's increasing the number of requests, which increases the percentage chance of error. What do you guys think of that line of argument?
Is it an explanation? Sure. I think it's safe to say that this would not have happened if GDPR hadn't come about and forced a lot of companies to make a lot of different changes to accommodate these kinds of requests. Is it an excuse? No, it's not. Them's the rules of the road. It's what you have to do. I think that this is fairly obviously some kind of a human error. Thankfully, it was only limited to a spot case unless we start hearing more of it. But this is, I don't know, at some point someone's gonna drop the celery and try to put it on display.
This is also not sort of like, oh, I meant to send an email to Tom Merritt and I sent it to Sarah Lynn instead. Whoops, oh well. This is 1,700 accordions that happened within someone's private home between the person who owns the speaker and whoever might have been in the room at the time, or perhaps just them. That's a lot. That's a huge privacy issue. And sure, it's a fluke. Let's call it a fluke. Human error. Okay, fine. Go ahead and that's fine with me. But if this happened to me, it's such a privacy breach, a personal privacy breach. I don't know how I would feel about it. I know I would be extremely upset and I would get rid of all my speakers.
The one thing I would like to point out is a lot of people are saying, well, obviously humans handling this was the problem and they should automate the system in the future to prevent this, which is the exact opposite argument you have every time an algorithm messes up and say, you know what we need is humans looking over this to make sure that the algorithms aren't screwing things up. Right. Yeah. So I just want to point out that every time there's an error with one thing, the opposite thing is presented as the solution when, you know, maybe it's not that easy. Maybe it's just men. Maybe sometimes mistakes just happen.
All systems are fallible.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we find them so we can patch them and move on.
Totally.
Well, some customers are upset about this next story as well. After some customers on social media and a few Mac Rumors forums claimed that their new iPad Pros seem to have small curves or perhaps bends, either out of the box or soon after being taken out of the box, Apple confirmed to The Verge that yes, some 2018 iPad Pro models indeed are shipping with a slight bend in the aluminum chassis. Apple says this is due to the cooling process that involves the iPad Pro's metal and plastic components during manufacturing, but it's not going to impair performance. It's not going to get worse. And Apple does not consider it a defect.
You're worrying about it wrong.
All right. Yeah. Let me ask you this question.
You got a bent iPad. What's the problem?
Apple's new slogan, get bent.
Yeah. It pays. Finally, a bent Wookiee for our own generation. will they swap one out for you?
They will, if it's within 14 days of purchase. That's just the standard thing. They have not said they'll do anything exceptional for this yet. We're waiting to see if they say, oh, if it bothers you, bring it back even outside the 14-day return. But any product you get a 14-day return on.
If it's so cool that it's not a defect, then it's so cool that you can resell it. That's my opinion. You should be able to go get a non-bent iPad Pro if you want.
Well, and as The Verge noted, and many publications posted about this once it got some traction, but they did just that, and their second iPad Pro was also bent. So if it's a bunch of 2018 models, just because you get a new iPad Pro, it might not solve the issue. If it bothers you, that's why Apple's saying nothing's wrong with your iPad.
Right.
It's slightly bent.
And it's not like the iPhone 6 where it seems to be impairing function. It just looks weird. On the other hand, Apple prides itself. If this was another company, I might let them go. But Apple prides itself on machining and manufacturing being pristine, things that feel good in the hand and look good to the eye.
Yeah, no,
this doesn't.
You pay for form and finish. So if you're unhappy with the form and finish, then I think that even if it takes, you know, throwing 15 of these boomerangs back at them, that you should get one on the level.
Just so you know, Justin is being metaphorical. They aren't bent quite as bad as a boomerang. So. modern encryption is based on a one-way process. It's difficult to reverse. You know, it's usually multiplication of primes or something like that. However, quantum computing promises to make that reversal easy, if not trivial. So the worry has been, how are we going to encrypt things when quantum computing becomes ubiquitous? Well, a team of engineers at Penn State have developed an encryption protocol that is unclonable and unable to be reverse engineered. To do that, you need truly random numbers, not from a random engine on a computer, but like truly random, which is a very difficult thing to do. So the engineers look to something that has no mathematical basis, human T cells. They take photographs of a two-dimensional array of 2,000 T cells and digitize it. Pixels that are where a T cell is become ones, and empty space pixels become zeros, and you create the key. Living cells stay for a long time, at least in computer terms for sure, and move around randomly so they can be photographed repeatedly to create new keys. In a recent issue of Advanced Theory and Simulations, the team notes that even if someone knew the cell type, the cell density, the key generation rate, the key sampling instance, it's impossible for anyone to breach this system.
Wow.
I mean, never say never, right? As soon as you say it's impossible, somebody will figure out some workaround you didn't anticipate. But mathematically speaking, this is impossible to reverse engineer. If you're going to crack it, you have to come at it some other way.
Well, and the part of this is the fact that after all of encryption's issues and shortcomings and the need to make it better and breaches and privacy and data and all that stuff, human T cells are actually what we're looking towards now as, you know what, this actually might be, the safest way to go about this.
You might
back
say
to the human body.
They're immune to hacking.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, this is insane.
Unless they're Roger.
It kind of leaves you speechless. It really does.
I mean, really, what am I, like, I can't say anything to that. I'll tell you what, you fit that story to a T. About 110,000 passengers on 760 flights at Gatwick Airport have had their flights disrupted because of drones flying over the airfield. Sussex police say that they don't believe this is terror related. But it is a deliberate act of disruption based on industrial specification drones. Gatwick Chief Operating Officer Chris Woodruff said police didn't want to shoot the devices down because of the risk from stray bullets. The Army has been brought in to assist with specialized equipment. SUPT Justin Burtonshaw, head of armed policing for Sussex and Surrey, said, quote, "Each time that we believe we get close to the operator, the drones disappear. When we look to reopen the airfield, the drones reappear."
Now, hopefully they have found this person by the time you listen to this, but I thought that this morning when I first saw this, and they still haven't figured it out. Advanced persistent threat, country on country disruption, prankster? Hard to tell.
This is like a modern Sherlock Holmes story, right?
It really is.
Like, there's the a very something very dastardly about this kind of thing, and also it's like, man, talk about just tremendous disruption during the holidays, no less. You know, just shutting down an airport. That's
yeah.
Wild.
We need those trained eagles or those nets that we heard about. Ways to defend airports against drones. We need those here.
It worked for Lord of the Rings.
I mean, part of me is like, how did this not happen sooner? Mm. Because if it's a certain kind of drone, yeah, you can't fly within a certain area of airspace, and those who have such a license would know that. So I can see why authorities are like, this is deliberate. Somebody's screwing with us, right? It kind of reminds me of the era where in the movie theater, someone was pointing the red light at the mm-hmm. screen and upsetting mm-hmm. everybody. It's like, okay, well, you're not hurting anybody. But to disrupt this many folks, hundreds of thousands of passengers flying during the holiday season, it goes above and beyond a prank.
Oh no!
This it might not be terror related, but this is. I mean, disruption is a kind term for what this is.
No, this is millions of dollars in either lost revenue or money spent by these airlines to re-accommodate all these passengers. I mean, the reason why you don't see stuff like this is because this isn't just one wackadoodle flying his drone around. This is a big coordinated effort, right? And it is hella illegal. Like, this is like some real.
This is not
like, oh, you scamp. Like, someone's really getting in trouble for this.
The mind wonders if some organization might have an axe to grind against the UK for some reason. All right, I'm going to invoke some executive privilege here. I've been doing this kind of show for more than 10 years. I've been doing this show almost 5 years. And usually I only include stories if they have a direct impact on the consumer. But I've also been talking about copyright for 12 years. And I am ready to celebrate, as Smithsonian Magazine notes, January 1st, 2019, for the first time in 20 years since before podcasting, some copyrighted works in the United States will pass naturally into the public domain. Among the items from 1923 that will become public resources will be Robert Frost's Stopping by the Woods on a Snowy Evening poem, the song Yes, We Have No Bananas, public domain as of January 1st, the stage adaptation of The Picture of Dorian Gray by Theodore Pratt, and the movie The Ten Commandments as directed by Cecil B. DeMille. The gap was caused by the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act, which added 20 years to the existing U.S. copyright protection in 1998, making works that were made before 1978 become protected for 95 years, and anything produced after 1978 protected for 70 years plus the life of the author. Mickey Mouse went at that time from passing into the public domain in 2004 to now staying protected until 2024. So the clock is ticking for Disney to start lobbying to extend that act again.
Well, you mentioned, Tom, that this might not be something that directly affects the consumer, but think about the YouTube mashups.
Right.
That could be created from these works of art.
Oh my God! Right, or just the Yes, We Have No Bananas cinematic universe that awaits us.
Finally.
Well, Robert Frost is a great example. Everyone knows, I took the path less traveled by poem. Why? 1919. That one's been in public domain for a long time, but a poem from 4 years later, no one can use without permission, so it's virtually unknown.
This is obviously a very controversial issue. I think the question that we should have with stuff like this is not only when is it a better public resource and when should the law not be in between somebody who wants to make something or reproduce something, but also it's like, what is the benefit of having it being reproduced? I think for something like Robert Frost, look, there's a lot of stuff there that, you know, the world would benefit by cheap copies of his poems being put out into more hands.
And a lot of our historical perspective on the 20s is skewed toward the early 20s because that stuff's more accessible and you don't need permission to put it in your work of history that you're putting out there or talking about. You don't want to use Yes, We Have No Bananas over your podcast without permission until January 1st when we can.
You need to open your first live. You need to open your first live DTNS with Yes, We Have.
The 5 year anniversary show should open with Yes, We Have No
Bananas. We have no banana.
folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Jason Keebler from Motherboard wrote a blurb today suggesting we should replace Facebook with personal websites. Now, he kind of waxes philosophical about his old sites that he used to have. I think he had a tripod site, which is still up, that he points to. And he writes that Facebook isn't really all that much better or more convenient, for publishing anyway, than having your own website or sending emails or chats. But for some reason, Facebook and Instagram are where we post now. And Jason posits that he wished he hadn't given up control of his publishing and just kept doing his website. Now, of course, the other side of this is, it's sure, you can publish through your own website and emails and chat, but are your friends and the people you want to reach there? Are they paying
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Attention, because they're paying attention to Facebook for good or ill. And that's the other side of this equation. One of the solutions that gets touted to this is decentralized social networks so that you can easily tell people, go here and see all of my stuff and I'll see your stuff. And there are a lot of them. Just today, I came across a listing on Hacker News for something called PocketNet, which uses the blockchain to create a decentralized social network platform. It's not alone, and it's certainly not the best bet. There's also Minds and Memo and Sola and Steemit and SocialX and more. None of them has the momentum yet. But seeing this on Motherboard made me think, Justin, I've been saying for a long time, this pendulum's going to swing back against the centralization of this kind of publishing. Are we at the apex of the swing here? Is somebody going to crack this and figure it out?
If I had money to bet and I were forced to, I would bet no. We are not at the tipping point for these kinds of sites. And I say that with a heavy heart because, man, as somebody who came of age professionally in the blog revolution, it was something that I think back now tremendously fondly of. I loved my little visit from house to house. It's still the predominant way that I get my news. I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook these days. And I would say that publishers and websites probably greatly regret the siren call of Facebook as the predominant way that they could garner clicks as Facebook has become more and more restrictive of that. So that being said, to me, the moment that things took an irreversible turn toward the social was the fade of RSS readers and the fact that even the kind of an industry standard with Google was something that they didn't think was really worth it to push into, because that to me was the way that if you want to, like, okay, well, you got to make sure that your friends are paying attention. You want to make sure that people are doing that. In my mind, in the aughts, I thought that the next step was going to be smarter, better, faster, clever evolutions to RSS to make sure that you got a personalized experience within by going out and tapping all these different kinds of places. And then, you know, obviously we just found out that the easier way to do it was to go into these walled gardens on Twitter and Facebook and just get the social proof of what our friends are into as the way that we would understand the world around us.
Yeah, somebody who was blogging, I don't know, from when I first realized how to put together a movable type cascading style sheet, and then I moved on to Typepad, and I was blogging for a while. Blogging was a thing. Not everybody did, but those who were enthusiastic about it, we had each other on our blog rolls, which was a little bit of a social network, right? And yeah, it was something that worked pretty well for a while, and then it got to the point where social networks existed, and then okay, I've still got my my private blog that I, or my public blog, but my personal blog that I'm updating, and I can certainly easily share a link on social media, but well, now I'm asking people to click out of that. No one wants to do it. So I could just write it in there. So I think that my sentiment is shared by a lot of folks where there was no real, this is better. It was more just, I want people to read the stuff I'm writing, the pictures that I'm sharing. And this is before the days of Instagram. So times have changed somewhat, but I am very much of the mind, particularly when you might be, I don't know, you're posting a new podcast episode and you really want to be able to quantify the numbers of people who are visiting your website to click and watch something. All the social networks, those numbers are a little bit weird. And we all know that, having worked in the business for some time. So, you know, I don't know if it's the answer to try to get everybody to just get their own domains again and make it all, back to the old days of blogging. But I certainly do miss them in the sense that I knew that if somebody was actually visiting my blog, that visitor number counted for something. And if they were commenting, it took a lot more effort than it does these days.
Yeah, let me posit something and try out an idea. I think the key to the rise of social networks in general, and particularly Facebook, was the ease of finding your friends and then the ease of communicating with them. Because GeoCities had all of the things, right? You know, you create your page, you can link to other pages, you can be in neighborhoods with people, LiveJournal as well. But Facebook made it super easy to find people. And also, by design or dumb luck, became the place that everybody wanted to be, so that it was a self-fulfilling prophecy that you wanted to be on Facebook because that's where everybody was.
So, well, and before that, it was MySpace.
Facebook really became, because of the exclusivity with the college kids, and then it became a desired thing. And once it got momentum, then I was like, well, I should be on Facebook because everybody's on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, and it snowballed from there. And now it's hard to get away for a lot of people because they're like, yeah, but that's where my family is. That's where my friends are. That's where I communicate. That's where I talk about things. So to get people off of that, you have to provide an easy, compelling switch. And it has to give them something they don't want, or give them something they want that Facebook doesn't, like freedom, that is easy enough and compelling enough that they'll go to the trouble to start the move. And it has to have an attractive enough business plan to get the venture capital to get off the ground.
And that's the thing. Where is the buy-in when you're saying, no, set up your own thing in space? We're certainly, you know, is it just that you're going to sell ads on that? You know, I don't know. I guess business wise, I don't necessarily see it. But man, what I love there is something very delightful to me to the idea that we could be going back to a world where we could all have our own little towns. We could visit it. And I'd add all of you guys to my blog role.
I mean, it's not impossible for an open source project to take off, but it's harder. The way you jumpstart this is with money and marketing to get people like, hey, you tired of giving your data away? Come to this place. It's safe and decentralized and open. I mean, it can be open source and venture capital backed. That would be the ideal way to make it work. Making it work as a grassroots organization, as we've seen with Mastodon and all these others, really difficult. Really difficult to get the momentum.
And also, I don't know if giving your data away is a problem in the way that would motivate a mass audience.
It's over-indexed in the press, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's getting there. If it is going to get there, it'll get there in the next few years, I would think. But I don't know. Some people, data is just not something that a lot of people understand.
Yeah, Beatmaster says, a Facebook with Wikipedia pledge. Maybe. Wikipedia did it.
A personal appeal.
Yeah.
Well, one social network that we love very much is our very own subreddit. And thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. If you want to hang out on Facebook, well, you know what? We're not going to leave you out. Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow is where to go.
All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. Tynus from, he says, almost Christmas and sunny Cape Town says, one of the potential practical uses of AI tech is actually in games. We were talking about this on a recent show. As somebody who has played games since the dawn of 3D graphics, I can remember games with 100 characters all using the same face. It's time consuming to generate those characters. Today, we have far better tools and huge libraries of stock images to use, but I can see the use of this technology to generate a whole clan of elves with familial similarities or weird wasteland creatures deformed all procedurally. Open world games takes a million men plus to build today, and I can see this technology being used to reduce that over time.
Totally. Yeah, using that artificial face creation suddenly makes games or movies, crowd scenes. You can have more realistic looking crowd scenes with fake people in the background. We also asked folks to send us examples of where a div tag could potentially break a site in Edge, but not in Chrome, that wasn't designed to do that. An accidental way that would happen. And we got a couple of responses. Andrew from Snowless Colorado Springs talked about something called feature flags, which allow a company to turn on or off features without needing to deploy an entire new version of the site. If you created a new section for a website using a feature flag, a possible mistake could be to accidentally put a containing div outside of the feature flag if statement. This would potentially be tough to catch, and the release that contained this bug probably would have a decent number of other changes or was one of multiple releases that day, so pinpointing a performance degradation in a lesser used product was probably low on the priority list and did not merit a no-go even if it was caught. Andrew says, I don't mean to condone Google, but I wanted to represent the potential process by which this could happen. And Liz in our Slack said, I don't know the specifics about the hidden div tag that broke YouTube on Edge, but Edge is very intolerant of unclosed and unbalanced div tags where other browsers seem to compensate for those errors and will render what it can. Edge will just not render the rest of the document. What it sounds like to me could be an honest coding error and, in my opinion, a serious failure of prioritizing other vendor browsers in QA test coverage.
Well, thanks to everybody who gives us feedback every week. And also thanks to Justin Robert Young for being on our fine, fine show today. Justin, where can people find you and hang out with you over the holidays?
Oh, you know, you can hang out. I can be a part of your life all year round, Sarah, if you only go to twitter.com/JustinRYoung and follow me there. Also, if you like politics, a lot of politics things that are happening. The president just legalized industrial hemp. Find out all about it by getting my free political newsletter at freepoliticalnewsletter.com.
Folks, thank you for supporting us on Patreon. We're well on our way to getting our one more patron than last month, thanks to you. So keep signing up, get us over the goal line. And as a thank you, as many thank yous are coming in January, one of them is a beanie, a toque, a knit cap with DTNS on it. I know a few of you asked for that. They are now available for pre-order. They go into production January 2nd. So production's kind of closed down for the holidays right now. But if you're willing to pre-order, you get a discount. Sale price of $19 until January 2nd at dailytechnewsshow.com/store. As of January 3rd, it'll go up to $22. But if you want to keep your head warm and show off your DTNS pride, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Keep the feedback coming. We love hearing from you. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Put it on your calendar and find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Last live show of the year tomorrow with Aaron Carson and Len Peralta will be back. Talk to you then.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.